You're the coach this trip, Dwayne Mintz. When we talk about Mintz, we talk about WIAC, the influence that this guy's had on the conference now in retirement for so many years, still, well, the name indeed is basketball. It was the time when it was baseball. It was the time when it was education. It was the time when it was that, but it's always been athletics. Coach Dewey, who or what got you going as far as coaching is concerned? Not just playing ball, but I mean coaching athletics.
Well, it probably started in my very early years in Rockford, Illinois. My parents, I was born in 1928, and that was during the Depression. And the Depression hit us pretty hard. I was born in Racine, Wisconsin, and by the time I was a year old, I had polio epidemic closed the schools in Rockford. But the environment there wasn't the greatest. It was a rough neighborhood that I was brought up in, and sports really saved me from real serious injury.
Let's not. You're not the first to tell us that. From Rockford, then, we know that Mankato, Minnesota played a very important part in the maturity of Dwayne Mintz. But is there, can you, it may be an unfair question, Dwayne, but I got to ask it anyhow. Is there one person or one event or one thing that got you to think, hey, I want to coach?
I don't know if specifically I could identify any one person, but my parents were uneducated. My mother went to 8th grade and my dad went to 6th grade. But they did very well in life. They both worked hard and brought me up on pretty much the straight and narrow. And my brother was 15 years younger than I, particularly the same route that I did on the high school level.
Athletics, baseball. I know that baseball was very important to Dwayne Mintz, as is basketball, certainly. But the degree then, kiddo, that you placed, or the emphasis that you placed on athletics in the development of Dwayne Mintz, your thoughts on those early days of athletics?
Well, baseball was a sport where I had to work a lot in a small country grocery store, a little one-room store. And outside that store was a big field. And when nobody'd be in the store, a couple of neighborhood kids would come by and we'd go out there and hit flies or play catch. Or if three of them came by, we'd have some batting practice. Even though a couple of windows were broken in the process. But I learned to throw there. About 300 and some feet away was a highway, and this was all field between the store and the highway, and I'd throw stones. We had a big pile of rocks outside the store my dad had used to build the store out of cement blocks, and I would throw stones over the trees and not hit cars that were going down the highway. Now, those pine trees were pretty tall in themselves, so I learned to throw with a pretty strong arm after a while. They figured by the time I was 16, I was throwing well over 400 feet.
Was it more baseball than basketball in those days, Dewey?
Well, we played a lot of basketball. Rockford was a basketball town. But it was, for me, I had the attention of the scouts at quite a young age because of the way I could throw. I wasn't a great baseball player. I could just throw real well. And that grabbed their attention, and pretty soon it spread around, and by the time I was 16, they were asking me to come to Wrigley Field in Chicago and work out. That straightened me out, and the group I used to run around with when I was about 10, I guess they picked me up, and they'd force me to go down to things and then sneak downtown without my folks knowing, or I'd get blistered. So when the baseball players started coming out to the house and hitting flies out in that field and playing around, that saved me because they would stand up for me and I wouldn't get the snot kicked out of me.
Another great influence for athletics and the development of young fellas. We see that so many times and so often today, the influence of athletics. Let's take this a step further now. put you into college and put you into coaching, starting off, the influence then of teachers, because Dwayne Mintz, education has been very, very important in your life. You've stressed it to kids that you played, that played for you, that you coached, and education has been very, very important. And go back to the days at Bethany, of coaching, of teaching, even of learning. Your thoughts on education in athletics?
Well, I think all coaches try to think this way, that when their players graduate, they're going out in the world and make it a better place for the people that live in the world. They're more productive citizens. And I always thought that when a player graduated, I wanted him to go out and be a more productive citizen in this world. And I think a lot of them have. Cliff Pertit, in our reunion last year, I called him. We couldn't get hold of him. He's living out east now. He's working for ABB Finance Corporation for Europe. He heads the whole ball of wax of banks over there for Europe. And he's married, got two daughters, both of them graduating from college. Cliff Pertit, who is a reserve center on our 69 basketball team that went to the national tournament.
I remember Cliff, and I remember that 69 team very, very well. Talk about, well, not just that squad, but so many of those kids that were on that squad. A couple of them went in to become pretty good coaches in their own right. You're talking education now. Is there a better education platform or classroom than a basketball court or a baseball field?
I've never seen one. I'm sure there are others who feel that way, too. When you have the stress, who was it? Booker T. Washington once said, it's not riches that build character out of people. It's the idea of overcoming obstacles. And I think an athlete has to overcome a lot of obstacles to be successful. And that's the key to enjoyment, plus, you know, the riches of the mind and the self-discipline. If you've got that self-discipline, there's kind of a little story about Doug Eha, who is MVP in the WSUC League his last year, which he was having a little problem. He was a 6'4 center. He was not a big guy, but he could jump big. And he's out of St. Paul, Minnesota, a left-hander. And we were playing a couple of three Division One schools that particular year. Well, on the trip, and then kind of went downhill on us after we came back. Well, we couldn't figure out exactly why, but we knew we had to shock him back to reality. And we were going over to River Falls to play a ball game, and I benched him, which was a big surprise to him. He didn't play at all. Well, before we went, I knew his parents and his relatives would be there, and it was going to be a great shock, and he'd either overcome this with self-discipline and come back, or he'd probably quit the team. He came back the next night to practice. From then on, he averaged 33 points a ball game and about 11 rebounds, and he became MVP.
Have you ever had a more difficult trip than that Montana bunch that same year? Because I think that's what you were alluding to, those division schools, and you had to stop down in Nebraska somewhere. I mean, those were some awesome games, some teams that you were lining up, Coach, that Stout played in those days, and Eha's trip. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, we took a plane. We played the Utah State University, played them real well, and then we went to
in Nebraska somewhere.
Well, we finished off at University of Montana, but we flew out of Salt Lake City, and it was about 85 degrees, and it was 40 below zero in Montana. And everybody on the plane got sick except me, and Jim, the assistant basketball coach, his first name was Jim, I remember. And he was sent from Montana, and he was scouting us. And I said, Jim, how do you guys stand all this bad weather traveling in an airplane and bouncing all over the place? And he says, oh, we get used to it. It doesn't bother us. And it didn't seem to bother him. When we got off, we had a practice scheduled right away, and all the kids came over sick. They couldn't practice, so I canceled it. And, of course, 30 minutes later, everybody's recovered. They're running around the motel. And they come in the room, Coach, we're ready to practice, see if you can do something. And so I called Jim's house, and his wife said, oh, Jim just got off a plane, and he's real sick. He's in bed.
It goes the other way, too, Coach, that's for sure. Let's take this a step further, Coach. I got to ask this. You took some time off to go get a doctor's degree, a PhD, out in Utah. Now, there aren't a lot of coaches in this country that would do that. You did this back in the 70s to really... was there a drive behind that? Or who influenced you to do that? What influenced you to do that? What was the situation that got Dr. Duane Mintz?
Well, I guess the last hurdle involved there was I went to our acting chancellor, and when I signed my contract here, they told me I'd have, at Stout, they told me I'd have summer work. And that didn't happen. And when it didn't happen, I inquired, and he says, well, you need a doctor's degree. That was the last staple toward the doctorate.
The influence sometime of having to, huh?
If I wanted summer work, I had to. But previous to that, some of the people I worked with kind of belittled athletics as if it was something below the educational area, you know, that it didn't have much to contribute to education. For a period of time, I built up a resistance to that, and I think that was the main reason I went on and got a doctorate, to show that most coaches, if they want...
Did that influence, Duane, was that an influence on players that you coached? Was it influence on those that were around you? The influence of the coach in that thought. Your thoughts on that degree?
Well, that was a fall off. There's no question about that. My whole idea was that if you dream big, you're going to end up doing bigger things. If you dream little, you're not going to do much. You know, you got to be lucky then. And you know what luck is, a lot of hard work put together. And so I always, my advertisement was always, dream as big as you possibly can. And if you don't, any of our players, Mark Loftus from Colfax, he came in here, he'd played center in high school, 6 foot center. And there was no way he could play guard, but he did. You know, but he did.
Colfax had meant a great deal to Duane Mintz and the University of Stout program, too, and a member of that 75 championship team.
Yeah, that was Kenny Obermueller. And Kenny was one of those guys that went out and shot a lot.
Overachieved, did you say?
Great, great shooter, though. He didn't overachieve in his shooting. He had great shooting ability. Little story about him, Eau Claire Memorial High School called him, wanted him to come over for a convocation. And okay, he didn't know what they had in mind. He went over there, and he got over there. They gave him a pair of gym shoes. Wanted him to shoot baskets with Shady, you know, the Eau Claire guard that was so famous over there. Well, they set up a little contest shooting from the corner, and Shady hit 20 straight without missing. And Kenny was nervous as a cat, and he was usually never nervous. You know, nothing ever bothered the guy. But he hadn't touched a basketball since the last day of the season that year, and it was his senior year, so he was all done. But he got out there, and he quit at 21. He said, that's it. He hit 21 straight. So he was a natural shooter. He had to learn a lot of defense, And he did very well at learning defense. He was an outstanding ball player.
Just a couple of, those are just a couple of the influences of Dwayne Mintz. We could go on near Dewey and sit and talk for a long time. But I want to wrap this up, Dwayne, on the influence your mom and dad had on you. You've raised some great kids, and now you're able to watch grandkids come through. The influence of family, and this lady that's been serving coffee and cookies here, the influence that that Ruth has had on Dwayne Mintz in his career.
Well, without her, I'd be nothing. She's my life, and our two were very family-oriented, and letters for me, lick stamps.
That's when you had to lick them.
Works. We would send out thousands of letters. And
one of the guys there, you're the coach, has said that any coach's wife, when the coach is worth his salt, that wife is an angel. And I think you got one. In fact, I know very well you have. We've known Ruthie for years. It's a pleasure talking to you always, young man, and thanks for the years.
Thank you, Jake. I appreciate it. I've been enjoying a coach, and probably more than I enjoy retirement.